From the Haunted Attraction Network, I'm Philip, and this is Green Tagged, Theme Park in 30, from Scott Swenson and I. If you are not interested in theme park news and developments, then feel free to just skip this episode, and we'll be back with our regular haunt news briefing on Tuesday. But I do hope that you will stick around and listen to some of the theme park developments, because they're pretty interesting. And one more reminder, if you have not listened to our Halloween special yet, you really should check that out. It is pretty cool. In fact, we have a whole week of specials. We have one on Halloween, we have one on Home Haunters, we have one where Scott tells his spooky original poetry, and we have one visiting Halloween past and Halloween present. They were all a tremendous amount of work, and if you haven't listened to them, you should take a jump back right now and take a listen. All right, without any further ado, here is this week's Green Tagged Theme Park in 30.
Howdy, Philip.
Howdy, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you know what? Today, in this particular episode, we are not going to talk about the election at all. So here's a little respite for all of you, those of you who are waiting to figure out, you know, who's going to be president of the United States, because we're not going to talk about it. We're just going to move on to other stuff. All right. So I'm setting my timer, theme park in 30, and we are on our way. So it looks like European theme parks are shutting down again, eh?
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not, no shutdown is ever good news, but a little bit expected. We had talked about this also previously about how we would just kind of see how the winter months went in different countries and different countries' approaches to things. And we definitely are seeing kind of a sweeping across the European space of sweeping decisions to close parks almost everywhere. So,
well, I mean, Italy did it first, didn't they? Didn't they kind of just say, okay, we're shutting the doors? And now Alton Towers in England has said they hope to reopen on December 3rd, which is the day after the new restrictions are expected to end, which I think is interesting. Like, no transition time there. It's like, nope, and we're open, because they're just chomping at the bit to open. You know they are. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that financially they need to open, you know? And let's see, what other temporary closures announced for other theme parks in England, including Legoland in Windsor and Chessington, Worlds of Adventure being forced to temporarily close beginning Thursday in compliance with the UK government's new restrictions to contain the spread of coronavirus. So I'm all for containing the spread of coronavirus. I'm 100% in that. Is closing the only option for them?
I think we will hear some other options later in the show.
So in other words, yeah. No. I think that it's interesting though that they are closing. And what leads a government to say we have no other choice but to close things? Is it fear? Is it politics? And not American politics. Is it fear? Is it politics in the UK? I mean, you're certainly more well traveled than I am. What's your thought on this? I mean, is it truly legitimate that they're terrified that they're going to continue to spread the coronavirus? Are the spikes that substantial? Or is it just a country that is more amenable to a full shutdown versus trying to change the way they do things?
I'm not sure that you're going to get an answer. You know, I think it's probably a combination of multiple of those things. And I think that overall, what we will see, again, as we go through the show, but we will see is the Western approach, which is almost like a blunt instrument. You know, like our approach here and then the approach in Europe has definitely been more blunt, as in less targeted. Let's just shut everything down, or let's, I mean, it's been really like kind of like hitting something with a mallet kind of a thing. You know, we're not going in with a scalpel here. And I'm sure it's a combination of all those things. I think it could be, you know, not involving people that could help with this more, tooled approach. It also, I think another big thing, which is something that you pick up on going into Europe, is that the culture is very different, in that it's not, you know, amusement parks are very much an American, you know, we are very invested in our amusement parks as a country, right. Less so in Europe, and in a paradoxical way, Well, maybe not paradoxical, but even as the AECOM index showed, even last year, before the accelerant of the pandemic, Asia was actually leaning more towards that. You know, Asia was projected to be the theme park center of the world by 2023, and I'm sure that projection has sped up. But you see that, you know, in a weird way, America and Asia seem to be much more interested in theme parks than you have with Europe. Even with back before COVID, all of the protests at Disneyland there in France. I mean, there's just a lot of weirdness going on. I do also think it's interesting, just like as a side note, a lot of the theme parks in, the Alton Towers and in these, like some of the more popular ones are not located in urban areas at all. It's not like it's a Orlando situation or a Disneyland thing where there's plop in the middle of a lot of people in both of these situations. Alton Towers, it's like you sit on a train for 2 hours, then you have to take like a taxi or a cab to get out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, they're in relatively rural areas that are not dense with people. And the only parts that are dense are actually like, I guess the parks themselves, but also the parks are not like indoor parks. These are outdoor parks in the middle of the countryside with plenty of fresh air. So it is just very interesting. And I think that, I don't know.
Well, and I also wonder, with any of the shutdowns, whether it's things that happened over the Halloween season, whether it's theme parks in any part of the world, if there's also not something about the business model where you have to look at, we can't even recoup our expenditures. We don't even break even. It costs us more money to open to significantly reduced attendance than it does to close completely. Do you think that's a factor? Because I can certainly see that playing into, if you're only getting, 3 to 5%, just to open for those 3 to 5% is going to cost you more than you're going to make. It's kind of like the people who wouldn't come back. We had trouble with some of the projects I've been working on to get people to come back and do gig work, because to do the gig work, it meant that they were actually making less than sitting at home and getting their unemployment checks. To do a short gig. So they would say, well, we either need a bigger gig or we can't take it. So I'm wondering if they're looking at some of those business models saying, oh gosh, if we open and we have even 25% of our budgeted attendance, how are we going to make it? Are we going to make it through? Now, interestingly enough, because I can see where that would be something that would go through their heads, but I will say, just looking at the microcosm of Florida and Halloween, that two of the projects that I worked on here actually exceeded the previous year's ticket sales. And even though they were more, they had a tighter rein on full attendance, but because of timed ticketing and because of guests wanting to get out and about, they actually, both of them had banner years this year. And even though they couldn't have as many people in at one time because of the time ticketing and because of the physical distancing, they were able to spread them out over a longer period of time, over the full run, and were able to have quite successful years. And not only in ticket sales, but also in per caps and, merchandise spend and culinary spend. I just don't know. I'm actually arguing with myself, because it's like, is it better not to open at all, or is it better to open in a way that that you can adapt and make changes so that your business model gets tweaked a little bit? Which I guess is what they're doing in many places in Asia, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I'm sure part of this also is that I think maybe, again, we don't know. There's a lot more focus here on like the Disneyland argument, where we see every day, we see like, people arguing with the governor, and we see all these petitions. We didn't really, at least, I'm not seeing that much of a dialogue back and forth in the European areas. And so it could very well be a thing where, the park directors there at Alton are like, thinking what you're thinking, but then the government is not listening. we don't know any of these. Yeah. And the dialogue is just not there, like it is here about that. Or at least maybe it's not it's not as much of a news story there.
Right. And we talked before about even here in Florida, when they started to raise the percentage of guests that they mm-hmm. could have in the park, mm-hmm. it didn't really matter because they weren't hitting the numbers that they already had. Now, that's starting to change from what
I understand. It is starting to change, yes.
That more and more people are recognizing, okay, I can go to a Walt Disney World park or a Universal park in Florida and you know, experience something that is at least safer. You know, where I don't think anybody knows for sure what's 100% safe and what's 100. Well, what's 100% safe is to be in a sterile environment by yourself. Okay, we know that, but that's true all the time. That's not just COVID. So, I think mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting because there's not a whole lot of comment about the parks that are open. We're talking a lot more about the parks that aren't. So I think that's interesting. I think that's very interesting.
Well, going down that road, we have our next two news stories are just about the demand. DXB Entertainment said that visitor numbers in Dubai parks and resorts in the first 9 months were down 67%. They also posted a 97% revenue decline, despite the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And of course the hotel, you know, so this is all happening while in tandem. They've made an announcement about Legoland Dubai being on track to open in December. So that is a little bit of what we were talking about in terms of handling it differently, still open, but demand really not recovering as well. But then meanwhile, we got more updates from the Q3 earnings on Comcast. And of course it is down by 81% Q3, which is not all surprising, but what was surprising was in the statement, from the Universal executives, they said, regardless of what happens with Universal Studios Hollywood reopening timeline, executives said that the company's theme park business could break even sometime in 2021, which I think is, it's encouraging that Comcast is so set on really saying this is going to work. It's going to be fine. Eventually it's going to work. It's going to be fine. Now you could say, well, duh, Philip, because they are, they committed how many billions to opening Universal Beijing? And their team is over there currently right now doing that. So duh. I mean, if they didn't say that, then there'd obviously be like a crisis in their stock price.
They're clearly up to their elbows in new product. And they're getting ready to create something, you know, over the top and epic, one might say. But the truth of the matter is they recognize that they're down, but they also recognize that they're going to come back. And I think that's really the key. You know, you have to, in any business, you have to recognize you're going to have highs and you're going to have lows. And you don't shut your doors when you got your lows. You got to, because that's just not good for business. It's not good for you as an individual company, nor is it good for the business as a whole. So, or the industry as a whole. So I applaud these folks who are muddling through and finding ways to make things work, which I think leads nicely into our next couple of stories here. We call this section the targeted recovery plan section, and it's basically that there are instead of making these broad stroke levels of safety. They're looking at it a little bit more minutely, and to use your analogy from earlier, they're being a bit more surgical in their approach. And interestingly enough, these are predominantly happening in Asian markets. Mm-hmm.
So we have two stories here. one is the ministry prioritizes four regions for tourism promotion and rebound programs. And I want to read, this is in the Indonesian areas. And what I wanted to read here, there's a few things I thought were interesting. So first, I'm just pulling stuff from this and I put my notes together. So it said the government would focus on boosting domestic tourism demand by rolling out travel package discounts to Indonesian nationals, particularly the upper middle class and millennial segment, which I think is really just really interesting that they're like, as we've talked about previously, they are saying we're not going to see a recovery in you know, people coming. So let's focus on nationals. And furthermore, let's focus on upper middle class and millennial segments, which I think is really smart. And then they said that they're looking particularly at rolling out discount packages for Indonesian nationals between the months of October and December, which is expected to have a multiplier effect on the economic worth, on the economy. And then the next thing that I think is interesting is they have a targeted relief plan. And the targeted relief plan is targeted to 101 selected cities and regencies located in regions where hotel and restaurant tax accounted for at least 15% of the locally generated income, which I actually, it's a pretty smart way of doing it, where they're saying we're going to target relief, but we're going to target relief to places where we know that have been impacted by tourism. And how are we going to figure that out? We're going to figure it out based on the tax that they paid, the tourism tax that they paid. And if they paid at least this percentage of tourism tax, then we know that this area has been affected by this. And since this is a tourism recovery plan, that's why we're targeting that there. And they also continue to urge a focus on business travel rather than leisure travelers when formulating policies, because they're like, well, duh, there's 5 work days versus 2 days in the weekend. So there's just more days for business travel. But they said for tours, for the tourism segment, that they're going to be looking at channeling incentives for travelers to boost demand, such as like events and you know, what we already talked about. But surprisingly, I don't know why I think it's surprising, but surprisingly targeted and comprehensive plan, not just for targeting for let's make a coordinated plan to boost local travel from these particular people, but also a targeted relief plan, which I mean, I'm not a policy guy, right? I'm not like a government policy person, so I can't tell you whether or not it just seems interesting to me that it's just a different approach to what we have been hearing from.
Well, and from my fellow old theme park folks, it's a phrase that we used to call shoot where the ducks are flying. You know, it's don't cast a broad net to expect that everything is going to recover in the same way. It's not. It's going to recover. It's going to recover locally. It's going to recover through business. It's going to recover regionally. And it's going to recover in specific demographics before it recovers in others. So why not identify those, target your efforts and your spend into those areas? And again, I love the idea of it's a surgical approach. You know, what we're doing is we're repairing the blood vessels. We're not amputating the leg. You know, it's a fascinating approach that I think makes an awful lot of sense. But as my caveat, like I've said from the beginning of this thing, we're in the Wild West. So, you know, who knows whether it's actually going to work or not. But it seems to make sense that you're going to, again, approach and focus your efforts and your energies and your money in the areas that are most likely to recover and are most impacted by that spend. So I think it sounds like it makes sense to me. It sounds like it makes sense to me. And I think, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say to add to that, while we're talking about this surgical precision, we might as well drop the next story, which is from South Korea. And the headline, I think, is a little bit misleading because it says South Korea expands masks requirement as COVID cases grow. And that's fine. But to me, the real story is actually here where they talk about they used to have a three-level system, just like have all these systems for our states. But they have a three-level system there and they're expanding it to 5 levels. And the reason that they're doing that is because they want to be more surgical about this. And under the old system, for example, clubs would be required to close under level 2 restrictions. A new 5 level allows clubs to stay open, but stops patrons from dancing. So this is incredible to me that they're actually looking at it again on the surgical level, where they're saying, let's not just look at the category of business. Let's look at actually what people do. What do they do? As Scott was saying, like, what are they actually doing here? And, you know, it's okay that the clubs stay open as long as they're not dancing and, you know, singing. So we'll design a whole level that gets to the specificity where we do more restrictions on the activities that are allowed to happen, you know, versus just, can you stay open or can you stay closed based on arbitrarily what you are, which not to harp on the on the Anaheim thing here, but it's like the problem we have with the Knots right now is that technically, because they're a restaurant, they can open, even though ultimately the activities are the same as if they would have opened Disneyland, because not allow people to get on rides at Disney, but if you just opened and let people walk around Disneyland, that's ultimately no different than the activities you're doing currently at Knott's. So it's just interesting that here in South Korea, we have people that are saying, we're going to look at the actual activities that take place in attractions, and we're going to do a better job of saying you can stay open, but if we are at this percentage of cases, you can't sing and dance. And then once we get back down, also just to note, they're freaking out about 100 new cases in South Korea, like 100, mm-hmm. like as in three digits, 100.
I think they had that 000. From the grocery store down the street.
Yeah, like
here in Florida. So the thing that I think is really interesting about this is I think it also has to do, I think it's also a cultural decision, because in order to be surgical, you have to be able to implement and monitor these smaller behavior chunks. It is much simpler for a company to say, or for a club to say, well, we're just going to close, that way we don't have to tell our guests they can't do something. I see this in the States a lot. I see this in Florida even more than I see it in other states, where companies and organizations are terrified to actually implement any sort of change, and they, you know, either don't do it or they pass it off to somebody else. And if there's no law enforcement regulation that says you absolutely can't do this, they are terrified to go up and say, I'm sorry, this is private property. We have made the mandate that you must wear a mask. Because, you know, people don't like to change, certainly here in the US. And they will fight, they will yell, they will threaten. It was that whole big thing that when the whole mask thing started, where people were using the American Disabilities Act as a shot, you know, but they weren't using it correctly. You know, they weren't actually reading the ADA, and the reasonable accommodations were not reasonable to them. So, you know, it's just. I'm not sure that we could be this surgical in the U.S. is my sort of tarnished, perhaps a little too cynical view on the situation. I wish we could. I wish people would be willing to, you know, play the chess game, not flip the light switch, so that we continue to improve and yet still keep things open. But I think in order to do that, we need to have clearer, more consistent rules and regs throughout the country. And not state by state, and not, you know, not leaving it up to the private business owners to be the only ones who are there to regulate and mandate.
Yep. And I definitely agree with that. And I would even say it needs to be more than park by park. You know, as Scott knows, I went to Orlando for Halloween, the week of Halloween, and I did go to all the parks, and I had terrifying experiences at most of them. I went, of course people are going to say, why'd you do that? But I went to Universal on Halloween Day to kind of look at the Beetlejuice opening that they did there. And I, you know, the security line was backed up all the way to the Jaws parking. So you started standing in line for security at the Jaws parking. And then, you know, eventually, and I'll just say, you know, when you walk past security in that the main road where the Starbucks and the cinema is, that was as packed and as unruly as New Year's Eve there at Universal. I mean, it truly was like mosh pitting to get through. And the weird thing, not the weird thing, but just to Scott's point, the haunted house experience was fine, because there's little markers on the ground. You move from marker to marker. The staff is standing in line. They're telling people, stand on the marker, stop being ridiculous. And then, you know, they have a person monitoring each scene, so you can't run into people. And they have plexiglass over where the actors' faces are, so they're not spitting on you. But so that, you know, anywhere where you could actually maintain control. That was fine. But then you walk out into City Walk and it's just a free for all, and you know, just good luck surviving that. And then also people, you know, just staff being very reluctant to wade into that sea of people and tell people to stop being ridiculous. And, but then meanwhile, you know, at Epcot, equal amounts of people being, not paying attention to where they're walking at all. But I watched a staff member, a cast member at Epcot chase a man down because he was just ignoring them. And, you know, the cast member did actually leave their post, stop the line, chase someone down and flag security and to like converge on this guy. I was like, oh, this is so exciting. Let me get out of the way. But...
This is exciting. I'm going to hide over here.
Yeah. But just, you know, even down to the how it's almost like each staff member has to handle it on their own.
Right. Well, and again, it's a whole new kind of training, too. And this is something that, you know, Disney parks in general have always been stellar at. And that is consistent training for their cast members. You know, whether we agree with it or not, they are consistent throughout, and they know, you know, they're there to try to stay open, especially after, you know, the massive layoffs that Disney has done. Now they're all going, you know, we have to make sure that it's safe to be here so that we still have jobs. And I think that's part of the commitment as well, is to show that, you know what, we're going to do this, and we're going to do it right so that we continue to be employed. But that's not the only, you know, new twist that is coming about. There are some interesting trends and developments coming up here. You know, it's not just training, it's not just making sure that people are safe, but there are some new interesting things coming up. For example, soon you may need a COVID test in order to visit a theme park. Now, this has already been discussed for the cruise lines, which makes total sense. Now, Philip, I don't know whether we're on the same side of this or not. How do you feel about this particular story? What are your views?
First, I want to just point out, this is from the Orlando Weekly, which is a fine institution. I mean, they're fine. I mean, they're not like a...
They're legit. They're not...
They're legit. Yeah, they're legit. But the story is definitely taking leaps in terms of its... It's a clickbaity headline. Ultimately, all they did with the story was just show that Six Flags has been asking in targeted surveys, they have been asking how people would feel about having to take a COVID test to enter their parks. So this is not Disney, this is not Universal, this is Six Flags asking in targeted guest surveys.
I will say, though, I have participated in online surveys for Universal Studios that asked the same question. So it is out there as well.
It is out. But it's not like we're... there's no other evidence besides them surveying, which, of course, I mean, some people will say that's plenty of evidence, which is fine. But I'm just saying that don't like start panicking. It's not like it hasn't been decided. And I actually personally, something that I was surprised at, I think, again, people are going to be like, what are you, like a rural idiot? I was actually surprised, pleasantly surprised, that in Orlando, there was such availability of rapid testing. And it was so like... rolled out, and it was such a thing, you know, where you truly could, you know, because I feel like I'm going to get lynched after this. I went, you know, almost every day.
Yeah, you attended something that you were concerned about. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. And also I met a lot of friends when I was there. We went to activities together. They were not in my quarantine bubble, but you know what? They all got tested, rapid tested. And because you could do that in Orlando, it was a thing. They all did it. We all, you know, tried to be as safe as we could. At these events. And so, but I will just say, where I'm at currently now, you know, I still need a doctor's prescription to get a test. It's not like that. It's not a drive-by, get a rapid test, you know, in 5 minutes type of thing, which it is in Orlando. And so I think that if it's not invasive, and if it is as easy as that, you know, as easy, like, honestly, it was easier to get rapid tested than it was to get a reservation to get into Magic Kingdom or Epcot for me. So I'm just saying, if it actually remains to be that easy and they do roll out rapid testing, I don't have a problem with it. I think, however, I still don't think it's a magic bullet as much as people are going to also disagree with that. I still think that the testing can go, it's not 100%. I mean, it's not that accurate. And also it, you don't know. I mean, you there's an incubation period. There's all these ways in which that can go wrong. As clearly as the colleges that tried to do this already, as they have already estimated by having outbreaks that happen. And so what I would be afraid of is if people use the excuse of rapid testing to throw out all of the other distancing and mask stuff. That's what I would be afraid of.
I have had people actually tell me, well, I just got tested, so I don't need to wear a mask.
Oh my God.
And that is absolutely ridiculous. No, I agree. I am surprised, but pleasantly so, that we agree 100%. I think you're right. I think it is something. Of course, see, I am not a theme park goer as much as I am a theme park worker. So I am 100% used to having a complete temperature check. Every time I go in, I cannot be on property without a mask. This is just another step that I think leads to something that may lead us towards either a cure or at least a reduction in the situation. There is no magic bullet. There is no magic light switch. It's a chess game. This is just a really good move of the rook to make certain that, oh, there's my alarm. All right, that's our 30 minutes. But I do agree that this is something that could be on the horizon, and I think it is something that should not be fought. It should be embraced as yet another tool in the arsenal. So that's our show for this week. And I just want to make sure that those of you who are enjoying the show, please check out greentaggedshow.com. Subscribe, join us. You can find us on pretty much all platforms. And tell your friends about us. If you've got friends in the industry who you think might enjoy all of the content that we've got going on here, we'll be back every single week. And hopefully our audiences will continue to grow with people just like you who are listening now. On behalf of Philip, this is Scott Swenson saying bye-bye.
That was Green Tagged from Scott Swenson and I. And if you liked this episode, please consider giving us a review in iTunes. And if you've already given us a review in iTunes or you're not using iTunes, then the next best thing you can do for us is please share this podcast with a friend. If you have a friend that would only want to listen to Green Tagged, there is a separate show feed for only the Green Tagged shows called Green Tagged. So you can get them subscribed to that, or I would love it if you would share this stream with them so they can get everything from the Haunted Attraction Network, because we've been doing this for quite a while and I think that we have a lot of great content for every haunter. So thank you in advance, and we'll see you on Tuesday.